3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is working with Beautiful Portland to collect socks and blankets for those who are sleeping outside this winter. Lobby of KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, between Burnside and Ankeny. Donations are accepted Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, clicks, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
We can be happy underground.
Good evening, friends at KBOO listening to us. This is the KBOO Youth Collective. I am Thomas, and today for our monthly show, our theme is humor. Now, to begin with, we have an interview with hands to mouth, right, Luke?
Yep.
Luke's over here, and this is by him and Umi. Enjoy.
And this is
Umi.
And today we are interviewing some people from Hand to Mouth. Would you guys like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Gio Alva.
And I'm Jenny Green Miller.
And I'm Lucille Dawson.
All right. So Hand to Mouth has launched a year-long residency program for high schoolers at Roosevelt High School to learn devising techniques. Why did you decide to start this program?
We pitched a proposal in fall to bring youth ages 14 to 18 into our location, which is Shout House, and have the opportunity to create theater using devising techniques. And devising, I don't know if you know much about it, but basically it's creating something out of nothing. And it just requires a group of people that are interested in one topic and willing to collaborate together. And I felt that's something that age range, 14 to 18 year olds, don't often get the opportunity to do. And that devising provided an opportunity for a true collaborative experience.
So is devising theater kind of like improv? Or?
It is, but it's not. You can definitely use improv to develop a devised piece, and very much you use a lot of the same skills, because like with improv, you never know what's going to happen. You just go with it. With devised theater, it's kind of the same idea, where you create something out of nothing, but as you're creating it, you're making it solid. So the final product is usually more put together and less improvised, though there could be elements of improv in a devised theater piece. To make it different. It just depends on the company, you know, but you use similar techniques, slightly differing goals.
Oh, cool.
Right?
I think one of the differences, too, is that devising requires source material. You're going out and interviewing people or researching your topic, which doesn't often happen in improv, because improv is, you know, on the fly, on a set or a stage.
All right. What is the goal of this residency?
One, provide an opportunity for youth to devise. Two, to teach devising techniques to youth. Three, I think to develop an interest in creating that way, because it is fairly unique. And four, to walk away, give youth the opportunity to walk away saying, we created this show together and all of our voices are part of this performance.
When people think of residencies, they usually think about someone moving to a place to just make art. which is probably not how it works at the Roosevelt High School. Can you explain why you decided to use the word residency and how it works?
Sure, I'll answer that. Well, we're guests at Roosevelt, so in a way, we are in residence at Roosevelt High School. As I mentioned earlier, originally it was inviting youth to our theater company to create and have the opportunity to create over the course of a year, so then the youth would be in residence with Hand to Mouth Theater Company and company artist. So kind of that word works both ways. So we feel that we've been given a great opportunity to be guest artists at Roosevelt. They have a really solid drama program there, and the director of the program, Jo Lane, felt that this was a nice addition to what she was already teaching in her curriculum.
Nice. So you're in the middle of the project right now. What has surprised you about the process so far?
There's so many things. There's something every day that surprises me. I think the number one thing for me, and then Gio, you can answer it, is that when we set out to teach this program, devising often is attached to social justice work, theater work.
And I did not know that.
We had a long discussion about we didn't want to lead the students in that direction. We wanted them to just be able to create something that they wanted to create, because like I mentioned, all parties have to be passionate about the topic. And the day we came, we were there for 2 months, and on the day it was time for them to pick their topic, I think it was the second suggestion, and they picked school shootings and survivor guilt. So they picked a very heavy topic, and they 100% have been invested in it as an ensemble.
Yeah, same thing. That's what surprised me the most, is that they chose to pick this topic. We didn't give them like options. We were just like, what do you want to do? And after someone mentioned the school shootings, everybody was like, yes. But others were also very strongly no, because it felt like it was a very strong topic. But by the second time we met after that conversation, everybody was pretty much on board. Like, yes, let's do this. But... Yeah. That's a very mature decision, because most of them are freshmen, sophomores.
I think there's one junior or a couple juniors, but Tatum's a senior.
Yeah, so they're all very, very young in high school, so like that just surprised me.
No.
And I think I'm also overwhelmed every day by their creativity and what they come up with and how they generate ideas and how they really take care of each other and talk through their ideas and why they think it's important and how it could or could not work. I think that's one of the things that also impresses me, is how much this group of, for the most part, strangers really takes care of each other.
Can you tell us a little bit about the project that is developing?
Yeah, so the theme is school shooting / survivor guilt. And the idea is that the Roosevelt High School has never experienced a school shooting. So survivor guilt is this idea that... equally very happy it's never happened, but then also feel guilty that it hasn't. And they're staging it around the five stages of grief, which are denial, anger,
bargaining,
depression, and acceptance. And they're also, it's interactive with the audience, and it moves around their space, so it's not set on a traditional stage. So they're doing it in their, what they call their black box theater, and so the scenes take place around the entire space. Has music, someone's singing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's really, yeah. I think that's the best way to describe it.
You nailed it.
That sounds awesome.
So this is kind of a two-parter question. First, when will it be done, and how can we see it when the work is finished?
Aren't we doing this in two parts, where the first part of this is actually, so two-part answer. to answer the first part is, when can you see this? February 8th at 7:30 p.m. at Roosevelt High School as part of the Fertile Ground Festival. We're only doing it for one night. And then after this, we're going to continue workshopping it. And then the hopes is that we can do it, later down the line, outside of the school, or maybe even school again, but giving it, investing more into it. So this is like a sneak preview of what they've been working on, and then we're going to work on it even more to develop further and see where we take it after that. Right.
So we encourage everyone to come February 8th mm-hmm. to Roosevelt High School.
In St. John's, if no one knows where that's
yeah.
at.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the other part?
You basically answered yeah. it.
Ka-ching!
What is your favorite part of working at Roosevelt High School?
Well, I don't know if you've had the chance to visit, but they have an amazing theater department. They have a brand new stage, and it's the most impressive theater I've ever been inside. Wow. But I think what I like most is that their theater teacher, Jo Lane, has just an amazing program that she's put together all on her own, and she's like a one-woman show. And they respect her, they respect the work, they respect the process, and I think that's what I admire the most, being there.
I've actually been lucky enough to been working at Roosevelt High School for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Not working there, part of the school, but like with Jo, she's invited me a couple of times to come be a part of different projects with her. And man, the students, they're something else, you know? Like, I don't know. There's something magical that Jo does in that classroom that all the students they all feel like they're a part of something, even though they don't know what it is yet, because it changes consistently. You know, every year you have new students, every year some students leave, so it's ever evolving, but they know they're a part of something, and it's so beautiful to see that for 4 years now. And I don't know how teachers do it. Like, it breaks my heart every time I see students graduate. Like, I'm super proud and happy for them, but at the same time, it's like, yo, man, I just spent a year with you, 2 years, 3 years, and now 4 years with some of them. And it's like, man, it gets harder and harder every time. So I don't know how teachers do it. How can teachers, like, basically raise these kids for 4 years and then say goodbye to them? Like, it's a beautiful connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. what advice would you give to teens who want to get involved with theater?
Go to theater. That's what I would say. I teach at a couple different schools, and I'm always reaching out to other theater companies for free tickets for kids. And if there's a group of kids that want to go see shows, I'd suggest that they reach out to the box office and say, hey, we're in middle school or we're in high school, give us a free ticket. And all of those theaters say yes. So mm-hmm. that's one of my first recommendations. And then there are a variety of programs for youth. There's one at Portland Center Stage. We have this one, Hand to Mouth. Portland Playhouse has a great program. And just get involved.
Yeah. Go see it and go do it. That's the only way to get into it, is by seeing it and doing it.
What advice would you give to adults who want to start art programs for youth?
Who want to start art programs? Mm-hmm. Do it. Do it, do it, do it. I'm a huge fan of the arts as an integral component to education. I don't think that we have enough opportunities for kids to be involved in the arts, let alone theater, because we've ripped so many of those programs out of the schools. So I would just say to any adult that's interested, is just write a proposal and find a theater company to pitch it to, or a school district or something, and just stay on it.
Yeah, go. I mean, if you have kids, nephews, whatever you have, go talk to their teachers, to their schools, to see what their needs are. And then, like Jenny said, write a proposal and go to your local theater company and see if, I mean, most likely they're going to say yes, because this is really important. Everyone wants to get in on this. So, yeah, find what school needs what. And then, yeah, just talk to your schools. Just talk. And then make it work.
I'm going to jump in on this conversation. When I came to Hand to Mouth, I expanded our education program by reaching out to the after-school programs, SUN, Schools Uniting Neighborhoods, and directly reached out to teachers saying, do you want arts programming? And we found that, especially in Multnomah County, there is a deficit of arts programming in public schools. And so we're able to offer our program in 9 different public schools, totally free of charge for students. And that does include the Roosevelt residency. So if there's any teachers that are listening, hit me up. We'd love to come to your school. But anybody who wants to start arts funding, reach out directly to the schools and offer programming at no cost to students. That's the best way to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that any of you wanted to add? Any like closing comments?
Thanks for having us. Oh gosh, I could talk about kid and student theater forever.
Yeah, I'm
donate to Hand to Mouth to continue supporting these programs and our ability to make them. Like I said, we do it at no cost to the students, so we have to come up with the funds somehow.
Yeah, come support our shows. How many shows do we have at Fertile Ground? We have 2 or 3?
Three different productions running in Fertile Ground. Check it out on our website, handtomouththeater.org.
That's one way to support. Donate to us. Invite us to your school if you're an educator. Mm-hmm. We would love to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming.
What is the contact information to find out more about Hand to Mouth Theater projects like this?
My chair is really squeaky. our website is handtomouththeater.org, and theater is spelled the fancy way with the R-E at the end. You can also check out our community art space, shouthousepdx.com, and feel free to reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, email. That's all the things that we have.
Mouth.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Good night.
All right. Thank you, the people from Hand to Mouth. Thank you, Luke, and thank you, Umi. Now, my friends, I have some bad news for you. Sadly, we all lost one of our friends the other day. Terry Jones, he was a crucial member of Monty Python, passed away yesterday, January 21st. His work included co-directing The Holy Grail. He was also the sole director for the film Life of Brian and The Meaning of Life, both amazing Monty Python films. Well, losing a friend, even if you haven't met them ever, is tough. It's important to remember to let ourselves smile some. So the next song is a song from the Monty Python film Meaning of Life, and it reminds us to keep smiling and keep looking up. Here's the Galaxy Song.
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious, or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at 1,000,000 miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, 'cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
Hey there, friends. That was the Galaxy Song by Monty Python. And we're getting ready for our next piece here. It didn't pull up on the computer, so I'm just going to fill time. You are listening to The Underground on the Youth Public Affairs Show. We are the KBOO Youth Collective. And it looks like our next piece is going to be a piece by Virgil about the 2010s. Enjoy.
To me, 2020 sounds like a fake year. A fake decade, even. When I think of the 20s, I think roaring, not, you know, the decade that we're currently living in. I don't know how many of you listening to this are adults, but I do know that for those of you who consider yourself adults, a new decade probably isn't a big deal to you. You've seen this before. You've seen the 90s change to the 2000s. You've seen the 2000s change to the 2010s. But I'm not an adult. I was born in the 2000s, and as such, I don't remember them. If we're being honest, I barely remember anything before 2012. Since I'm so young, or as everyone over 18 would oh so politely put it, a baby, this changing of the decades is a big deal to me, because I grew up in the 2010s. I became the person I was in that decade, and I sure as hell can't remember anything before it. And because of that, as 2019 was drawing to a close, I started to do a lot of reflecting. And that reflecting led me into this month's piece, The 2010s, A Decade in Review. So here we go. 2010. I started off the 2010s as a small child, and as such, I don't remember anything, but based on what I've been told, I'd say it was a great start to the decade. I was normal, you know, just your typical feral child who had most likely never worn shoes before. I've been told that not too long before the start of the decade, I figured out how gravity worked, and in tandem with that, figured out that people younger than me were very susceptible to it on account of having unproportionally large heads and barely knowing how to walk. And that meant that if I pushed them down, they fell. That was incredible news to me, and because of that, that's how I spent 2010. Just chilling, pushing over toddlers. That's the life. 2011. This was the first year that I have any sort of memory from, and it's quite something. Well, not bad by any means, based on what little I can remember, 2011 was undoubtedly worse than 2010, on account of it being the year that I started developing this nasty little thing called feelings. It just came out, so I'm not sure if you've heard of it. Anyways, allow me to say, if you somehow weren't aware already, being a small child with any emotions other than hit things and eat is truly, truly, utterly disastrous. In 2011, my family regularly went to some gathering in the park. It was quite something, and on top of that, it's where my first real memory takes place. It was the summer of 2011. I was almost 8, in the park with my mom. We were just chilling, sitting in a circle under some trees, eating food with a bunch of people that I didn't know. And that's when I saw him. Somebody my age. While I don't have the faintest idea as to what he looked like, I do know that my small gay mind deemed him incredibly attractive. After a long while of me being too scared to talk to him, I inevitably got dragged over to him and his family by my mom and forced to, gasp, actually interact with another human being. I don't remember too much about the night, but I do remember a couple of key details. The guy's name was not Ninja, but he told me to call him that all the same. And to this day, I still have no idea what it actually was. He and his family lived in a van and were just in town for a little while before they hit the road again. He showed me the aforementioned van and told me that he sleeps in the back, and made a point to note that he sleeps like a dead guy. For some unfathomable reason, I thought this was very cool at the time. I also, by some miracle, managed to get his email, and despite never getting a response, I proceeded to email him on and off for years. If you're listening to this, Ninja, I'm sorry that I sent you so many borderline incoherent emails, and I'm sorry that I used the moving Yahoo Mail emojis in them. You deserved better. 2012. 2012 sure was a year. Although it was worse than both 2011 and 2010 by a long shot, I like to think of it as the first year I was really a person. That being said, it was thoroughly unenjoyable for many reasons, most of which stemming from the fact that my emotional state was an absolute disaster. I'm not sure what I was doing for the first part of it, but during the summer I moved into a house with two other boys. They were roughly my age, but unlike me, they were extremely rowdy and so, so, so loud. They were, at risk of sounding dramatic, chaos in human form. I have so many memories of the atrocities that went down in that house that if I recalled all of them, I would take up the entire show. And this piece is already getting a little too long for my liking, given that we aren't even halfway through the decade, so suffice it to say that the dynamic between me and the boys was interesting. The boys in question were your standard rowdy preteen boys, but I was not used to that. I wasn't used to interacting with anyone. if that hadn't been made clear enough already. They were loud. They yelled and swore like sailors. They ran through the house with their gaggle of friends with the ferocity of a herd of wild animals chasing the first prey they've seen in weeks. And I was a deathly shy, socially incapable excuse for a child who couldn't form coherent sentences around anybody I hadn't known since birth. It was terrifying beyond words at the time, but in retrospect, it was truly hilarious. 2013. 2013 is by far the worst year yet, but in a very different way from 2012. Because while in 2012 I lived in constant fear of being trampled by a stampede of screaming children, in 2013 I would have killed someone for that kind of adrenaline rush. Because in 2013, I moved up to good old Vancouver, Washington. All of my friends at the time lived in Portland, and either couldn't or didn't want to make the trek up to good old Vantucky to see me, so I spent most of my days sitting on my laptop and doing nothing. My shyness increased significantly, and I got very, very sad for absolutely no reason. Nothing of particular interest happened besides a lot of drama with my dad's side of the family that I won't get into here, so with that, let's move on. 2014. After this, my timeline of things gets a little bit shaky, as there was a lot of moving around in a very short span of time, but I will do my best to recap everything. At some point between the end of 2013 and the beginning of 2014, we moved back to Portland and I made a friend who we'll call Minecraft Girl. She lived in the same apartment complex as me and my dad at the time. Then we moved back up to Vancouver for a little while and then back to Portland, where we moved in with Minecraft Girl and her family. Minecraft Girl was terrifying in her own right. She loved Minecraft, hence the name, and Monster High dolls more than life itself, and had a sense of humor that was the dictionary definition of Lowell Random. She was everything young me needed to break out of his shell and be the screaming 10-year-old he was always destined to be. We spent our days committing an insurmountable number of assaults on comedy and probably on a lot of other things. But that's a story for a different day. 2015. Although my emotional state in 2015 was by far the worst yet, I did spend quite possibly the entire year hanging out with Minecraft Girl, which probably helped at least a little bit. Later that year we moved again, but even still we remained pretty close. There's not much to say besides that, honestly, and with that, it's on to 2016. 2016, we're over halfway through the decade. 2016 was a pretty bad year. I had started slowly falling out with Minecraft Girl, although in return I had started gaining some other friends for the first time in what felt like forever. That being said, my emotional state was, surprise surprise, still worsening, and to add insult to injury, we moved back to Vancouver again. It was a tiny, ugly, claustrophobic apartment complex where the walls were so thin that if someone so much as breathed in the other room, you could hear it. And on top of that, quite literally, we had upstairs neighbors who stomped around and screamed at each other until the wee hours of the morning, which did not help anything. 2017. In 2017, things started to improve slightly. I actually had solid friends again, and I had started doing stuff besides sitting alone in my room and drawing horrible webcomics in MS Paint. Although my emotional state was still pretty bad, it hadn't worsened since 2016, which was quite an improvement. Towards the end of the year, I did manage to get myself involved with an insurmountable load of drama, and while it was certainly a new experience, it was a very bad one. 2018. We're almost done! 2018 was an absolute roller coaster. Sometime in February, I did escape from the drama, but it didn't do much overall. In March, however, I moved back to Portland for the billionth and final, thankfully, time. I started making more friends, and aside from my downright nightmarish summer vacation, my mental state had improved significantly. It was a bit of a mess, I will admit that, but I came out a better person for it at the end. 2019. We made it, boys. I'm actually writing this in 2019, so don't get worried or anything when I start speaking in the present tense. 2019 has been the best year so far. I don't want to jinx it, but I'd like to think that I'm closing out the decade with a bang. I actually have friends, allegedly, and my mental state is at the best it's been since my toddler-pushing days of 2010. It's been pretty weird staying in the same place for so long, and as the year has been drawing to a close, I've found myself getting cabin fever, but overall, I don't have that much to complain about. I'm excited to see what 2020 will bring me. Maybe my life will continue in this upward slope it's been on, or perhaps I'll circle back around and start knocking over little kids. No one can really say, but I'm excited to find out. Until then, this has been Virgil for the KBU Youth Collective.
Thank you, Virgil. It was nice knowing about your decade. And I'm going to ask you after this what you're going to be doing tomorrow, but I'm sure you don't have 2020 vision, so it'll be kind of hard to get an answer to that. Next is a piece from the lovely Maeve, the Inner Haven Weekly Informer, episode 6. Enjoy.
Good evening, friends and enemies, and welcome to the Interhaven Informer. Today's broadcast is brought to you by Universicorp in association with SmileTech. This episode of the Informer is a very special one. It's Humor Week here in the Unificates, and we hope you'll stay tuned and celebrate with us. Humor Week was started 11 years ago as a morale booster for Aldergate's citizens and caught on like wildfire eating through a forest. Or worms eating through the carcass of a bird by the side of the road. Or a deer eating through human bone. I'm pleased to announce that The Informer has partnered with SmileTech, a subsidiary of UniversiCorp, to bring you the following comedy segment. Enjoy!
Name a household object that you can never seem to get rid of despite how many times you swear that you've put it in the rubbish bin. You. Knock, knock. What do you call a short, psychic criminal who has escaped from prison coming down the stairs? A small medium at large. I found that one quite funny. What do you get when you mix together an organism that consistently in all environments aspires to be free from any bounds surrounding it, and the most complex interlocking system of authoritative measures ever developed to befit a human society in the entire history of cataloged civilization? I myself sincerely hope that all of our lives are too short to gauge an adequate answer to that question. Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty considered the expenses that are required to keep him merely alive in the world. Humpty Dumpty realized that he should be grateful for the system keeping him together, and that he should not even consider attempting to reach such a place where he would plummet and shatter, for those who care for him will no longer focus on keeping up to date a piece of machinery that has failed and that is obsolete compared to the new model. Indeed, Billy went down to the soda machine in the lobby. He wanted to get a new grape soda, the newest of them all. No one had ever seen this type of soda before. But it turns out he received an orange! Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore? This I whispered, and echo murmured back the word, Lenore! Merely this and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all of my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely there is something at my window lattice.
Thank you so much for your time. Wasn't that pleasant? In this day and age, it's important to meet every challenge with humor. Truly, there is nothing a laugh can't solve. And now, I turn your attention to your community representative, here to speak about recent developments.
Hello, Innerhaven. I'm Warren. I'm your community service rep, and I'm here today to talk about an exciting new opportunity. Have you ever wanted to be a part of something bigger than yourself? Ever wanted to contribute to your community? Have you ever wanted to safely and sanely explore everything the Unificates have to offer? If you answered yes to any of these questions, please consider applying to be a train conductor. A position on the Half Moon Circuit just opened up, and we're looking to fill it up as soon as possible, so please act now. Application forms can be found in most Innerhaven distribution boxes and can be turned in at any CSA office or to the station master down at Freedom Station. Thank you.
Thank you, Warren. The Unified Territories could not go on as we do without our magnificent train lines, and it's because of diligent, hard-working citizens like you that we can keep them running smoothly and safely. And while we're on the topic of safety, let's take a moment to address the question that I know many of you harbor deep in your chests like a second heart. What's going on? Unfortunately, the Loyalists have been making nuisances of themselves as of late. However many lengths we go to in the hopes of securing this broadcast, they manage to get their traitorous voices back on air. I wish I could tell you that we've eradicated them, but unfortunately the Hopeful Sect is no longer a simple annoyance. The Hopeful Loyalists are dangerous. One could even say unhinged. This is a tightly knit, single-minded group of insurgents who operate through a mob-like, perhaps even cult-like, mentality. I tell you this not in the hopes of scaring you. This is Humor Week, after all, but as a simple warning to all of you good people out there. Do not approach anyone wearing a crow insignia. Crow imagery of all kinds is banned in all five unificates. This includes depictions of crows on clothing, personal vehicles, houses, flags, paintings, murals, etc. Do not interact with anyone wearing a crow insignia. Do not approach them. Do not speak to them if they approach you. Loyalists are a threat to both safety and sanity. And now, the weather. All I can see for the foreseeable future is rain and copious amounts of fog, although it doesn't look like we'll be getting any crystal in the forecast until next week, so umbrellas are optional. Remember to purchase new batteries for your flashlights. The fog is very easy to get lost in, especially in the inner city. As always, lost children will immediately be taken into Bureau custody. And now, one more scrap of pleasantry before we close today's program. Over to you, Smile Tech.
Choose two. A death in the ditch. A death in the wake. A death in the incinerator. Brought to you by Universicorp, the shining star in the darkness of the apocalypse.
Citizens, you have my blessing to take one moment, just one now, out of your undoubtedly busy schedule this week to share a joke with a friend. Remember, there's nothing a laugh can't solve. Thank you for listening, and remember, stay safe, stay sane, and don't interact with anyone wearing a crow insignia.
The Interhaven Weekly Informer was created by Nave Z in association with Ryan Opiala Young and is written and hosted by Nave Z. Warren is voiced by Thomas Lowe. The voice of Universicorp is James Rain.
God, you know, all this time I spend at KBU, it just really feels like I need to go on vacation sometime, you know? What do you think, James?
Oh, I know somewhere where we could go.
Where are you thinking we can go, James?
There's this place, Constantinople. I read about all of its history up until the year 1449, of course. I don't know what happened after that.
I have something sad to tell you, James.
What could that be?
It's about the year 1453. It's Istanbul, not Constantinople.
What?
Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, now Constantinople, been a long time gone. Constantinople now turns to light on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, now Constantinople. So if you've a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul. Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say. People just liked it better that way. So take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
Istanbul.
Istanbul. Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say. People just liked it better that way. Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul. Now Constantinople, been a long time gone. And Constantinople, why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Constantinople, no you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
And that is why James and I are not going on vacation to Istanbul or Constantinople. Next is a piece by Luna. It's another one of her Chelsea pieces. You friends, enjoy.
This is Luna with this month's theme of humor. This work is entirely fictional and part of my ongoing series. Thank you. Hello, hello, one and all listening in. This is your host, Chelsea Marlowe, coming to you live from my cozy little studio outside the city. This is my usual little advice column. I am here for your thoughts and worries, lovely listeners. It's been a while, I know. You may have questions of what I've been up to. If the station was angry with me for last time, perhaps if I still was at all. Well, I don't like to leave my listeners wanting, so I'll tell you. I was... Well, I accidentally locked the door to the air room, but from the inside, and Gable left the spare key somewhere in a dimension that we'd left, and the station wouldn't open the door, and I mostly just ended up bored. Reorganized, pre-recorded. Heck, I watched movies with Gable. I was so bored. So to all of you expecting something tragic, congratulations, I'm fine. To all of you expecting something exciting, I'm sorry to disappoint. Anyway, time to get on with the questions. And the first one comes from Johnny. And he says, Dear Chelsea, how does the average person access the multiverse? Well, it's not an easy feat. If it were, everyone would do it. The travel times would be excruciating, but it is feasible. A person can't just jump between realities, neither can a machine. A location, however, spaces can travel through dimensions. There are a few locations in every reality. Some have more than others, which can take you through. Most places people call haunted are just not quite solidly in our reality. Do a bit of research into your local hauntings. Chances are you'll find the site of some murder, or a building with spooky air ducts, and it'll whisk you away to a world without shrimp or something. I do feel the need to warn you, darling. You can't just dimension hop like you drive a car. You don't control the travel, and you don't choose the destination. It's more like hopping on a plane without looking at the itinerary. Next question. Oh, it's been so nice answering these again. It really has been too long. And this one's from Gable. What is it this time? Dear Chelsea, I'm sorry to bother you during the show. I just got another message from Lily threatening to track down the station, and Maisie keeps calling demanding to know where Carl is, and I don't know where Carl is. Do you know where Carl is? Because things are starting to look iffy, and I'm worried that... Gable, I tell you weeks in advance that this show is not to be interrupted, and you pull this? It's not even a normal interruption. No, because that would be too kind. No, it's every single thing I was hoping not to talk about on air, wrapped up together like it's Christmas. I like to imagine that you're competent, mister, but more and more, it just seems like an impossible fantasy. I'll talk to you later, off air, about this. Well, it's time for the next question, so long as it's from anyone but Gable. Okay, good. This one's from someone named Tristan. And they say, Dear Chelsea, suppose someone hypothetically jumped realities to avoid being charged with manslaughter and somehow got stuck in a void. Imagine the void is very dark and very large, and you can't leave it no matter how far you float through it. If this were a scenario happening to a real guy, where would you guess that they were, and how could they leave? Preferably to a new dimension, and not backtracking to the old one they left, because they possibly killed their landlord in a fit of deserved outrage at the city's housing prices. Well, I'd say to this fictitious scenario that the person is likely in the space between universes. If this person has the hypothetical cell phone battery to, I don't know, email a radio host, then I'd assume they aren't far from a universe. My advice is don't panic. The universes fluctuate and bounce around sometimes. The person will probably be consumed by one eventually. Maybe in this new universe, the housing crisis will be sorted. Next up, lovely listeners, we have a message from Carl. Oh, hello. Gabriel told me you were a bit MIA recently. It's good to hear from you. Anyway, Dear Chelsea, I am on my way to find the station and get you out. I've been searching the multiverse for any sign of you, but the station moves too fast. I've been stuck in the void between realities. It's so empty. It's so vast. I ran into someone, and he lent me his phone to send you this email. I don't know when I'll find my way to you, but I just wanted to let you know that I will. Love, Carl. P.S. The guy I met in the void may have killed his landlord or something. I don't know. P.P.S. You probably shouldn't read this on the radio. The station will not be happy that I'm helping you escape. Whew. That's a lot. Did he really say love, Carl? I know it's a formality, but, well, he could have said sincerely, and he didn't, so... Oh, also I made a huge mistake. I really shouldn't have talked about that on air. The true host escaping. The station is not gonna be happy. Or, scratch that. It is currently not happy. Stay lively, listeners. Stay alive.
Thank you, Luna. That was an amazing piece. And another amazing piece is coming up right now, a piece by Mika about how music and laughter, not music, is the best medicine. You guys enjoy.
As the saying goes, laughter is the best medicine. Now, there is truth to this sentiment. According to an article published on Mental Floss, laughter stemming from humor contributes in positive ways within a person's day-to-day life. First of all, laughter can really help us in social situations, in making new people feel more comfortable around us. This article made a really great point that while smiling is great, it can be more easily controlled as well as easy to fake. Meanwhile, laughter is more natural. Laughter shows friendliness and that you are at ease and comfortable, which in turn will put those around you at ease as well. Secondly, high blood pressure or hypertension is a great side effect of stress. When we laugh, our stress kind of gets melted away, and a study held by the Journal of Dental and Medical Research shows that patients undergoing hemodialysis, which is a machine process to help purify the bloodstream, would listen to comic show CDs and find that their blood pressure had decreased. After doing this consistently for 3 months, their bloodstream had remained at a decreased level. Third, laughter benefits a variety of organs within the body. It helps the lungs out by leading to increased oxygen consumption, and for a period after a good hearty laugh, you may be able to breathe better. Laughter also helps the heart and the cardiovascular system. It helps the bloodstream move at a faster, better, healthier pace, and may lead to having a healthier heart. Fourth, laughter not only quickly boosts our mood, but is also a great help in terms of reducing stress levels and anxiousness. Laughter decreases hormones such as cortisol, and meanwhile fires up and releases endorphins, which are these naturally occurring happy chemicals. So the moral of the story is, don't hold back your laugh. Just go ahead and laugh anytime you can, whenever you want. Just for you, it might make you feel good. So that's enough to laugh as much as you want and as much as you can. So that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Mika from KBOO.
I completely agree with that. Always please keep laughing and keep smiling. And in order to help you with that, we've got a pretty funny song here on The Underground, the Youth Collective. Our theme is humor, as you may very well not know. This next song is New Math by Tom Lehrer. Enjoy. I Lied to You. Our next piece is a piece by Elizabeth about not being not funny. Now, please enjoy.
What makes something funny is a complicated question. Humor is subjective, after all. Something someone thinks is absolutely hilarious will leave someone else rolling their eyes. No matter what the joke is, there will never be a joke that absolutely everyone thinks is funny. Such is life. However, just like other art forms, the art of comedy is hardly something that can't be practiced and perfected. Just because humor is subjective, it doesn't mean that there aren't certain tactics that can be used to make your jokes get more laughs out of more people. To be perfectly clear, I'm no expert on humor. If I had to get on a stage and do a stand-up comedy routine, I might disintegrate. But I can tell when a joke just doesn't work. And through my 15 years of life, I've figured out a few patterns, by which I mean two, that I think are worth considering. Obviously, we should start with the basic structure of a joke. Build up, then punchline. Pretty simple and almost infinitely flexible. You could have a long story building up to the punchline, or you can make a funny retort or addition to something your friend just said. Either way, there's build up and there's a punchline. The build up, while it doesn't get as much glory as the punchline, is just as important. Without it, the punchline will come out as random in a forced and unnecessary way. The build up is the reason for the punchline, the punchline's exigence, if you will. So, build up is pretty important. And we all know what a punchline is, so I figure I don't have to explain that. Now, with that out of the way, let's get to my first point, timing. The term timing is rather vague, but it's one of the most important ways of ensuring that a joke doesn't fall flat. In short, timing encompasses two things: the relationship between the buildup and the punchline, and if the joke is appropriate considering events that are currently occurring. For instance, a scene where a character is dying in another character's arms probably isn't the best time to crack a joke, unless it's intended to make the moment sadder. Maybe the character was an optimistic jokester, and this was a way of showing that even death can't take that away from them, in which case, it totally can work. I told you all this stuff is flexible. My second point, delivery. Have you ever told a joke only to have someone else repeat it and get way more laughs? Perhaps their delivery was simply better than yours. Delivery matters the most in a stand-up setting. I don't have much in the way of solid advice, but I can list off a few things. Your delivery should sound natural, especially if your joke is coming in the form of a funny story. By natural, I mean not robotic. Put some life into your voice. A little bit of energy goes a long way. Don't slow down and put awkwardly long pauses at the end of every sentence. This isn't a presentation you're reluctantly putting on in front of your listless middle school class. This is a joke. We're trying to have fun here. And that concludes my two very brief pieces of advice on how to not be not funny. I hope my words might spark some inspiration in your mind, give you a few ideas, maybe realize that there's some areas where you can improve in your joke-telling ventures. My name is Elizabeth, and you're listening to The Underground. Have a good night.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Yeah, don't be not funny. It's really, really upsetting when people think they're funny and they're not, and just, like, say dumb stuff. So, Now that our technical difficulties of me not pressing the right button have been fixed, this is New Math by Tom Lehrer. Or
some of you who have small children may have perhaps been put in the embarrassing position of being unable to do your child's arithmetic homework because of the current revolution in mathematics teaching known as the New Math. So as a public service here tonight, I thought I would offer a brief lesson in the New Math tonight. We're going to cover subtraction. This is the first room I've worked for a while. It didn't have a blackboard, so we will have to make do with more primitive visual aids, as they say in the ad biz. Consider the following subtraction problem, which I will put up here. 342 minus 173. Now, remember how we used to do that. 3 from 2 is 9, carry the 1, and if you're under 35 or went to a private school, you say 7 from 3 is 6, but if you're over 35 and went to a public school, you say 8 from 4 is 6. And carry the 1, so we have 169. But in the new approach, as you know, the important thing is to understand what you're doing rather than to get the right answer. Here's how they do it now. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the tens place. Now that's really 4 tens, so you make it 3 tens. Regroup, and you change a 10 to 10 ones, and you add to the 2 and get 12, and you take away 3. That's 9. Is that clear? Now instead of 4 in the tens place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 10 to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look in the hundreds place. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 10 ones, and you know why 4 plus minus 1 plus 10 is 14 minus 1, because addition is commutative, right? And so you got 13 tens, and you take away 7, and that leaves 5. Well, 6, actually, but the idea is the important thing. Now go back to the hundreds place. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Everybody get 1? Not bad for the first day. Hooray for new math! New math! It won't do you a bit of good to review math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Now that actually is not the answer that I had in mind. Because the book that I got this problem out of wants you to do it in base 8. But don't panic. Base 8 is just like base 10, really, if you're missing 2 fingers. Shall we have a go at it? Hang on. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the 8's place. Now that's really 4 8's, so you make a 3 8's, regroup, and you change an 8 to 8 1's, and you add to the 2, and you get 1 2 base 8, which is 10 base 10, and you take away 3, that's 7. Okay? Now instead of 4 in the 8's place, you've got 3, because you added 1, that is to say 8, to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look at the 64's. 64. How did 64 get into it? I hear you cry. Well, 64 is 8 squared, don't you see? When you ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 8 ones. You add those 1s to the 3, and you get 1 3 base 8, or in other words, in base 10, you have 11, and you take away 7, and 7 from 11 is 4. Now go back to the 64s. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Now, let's not always see the same hands. That's right. Whoever got 1 can stay after the show and clean the erasers. Hooray for new math! New math! It won't do you a bit of good to review math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Come back tomorrow night. We're gonna do fractions.
And that was New Math by Tom Lehrer, and I am Thomas Lowe. Ha ha ha. That was funny. So there was actually recently a new Egyptian tomb found, right? So a couple of my friends, Jim, James, and Andrew, all went to this tomb, right? And Jim is an archaeologist, and he loves all things Egypt. So he went to this tomb, right? And then Jim was able to look at the hieroglyphs that said, hey, there's a way to get in here from the outside. He could decipher the hieroglyphs. So they went through there, right? They went into the tomb. And there were a few things in there. They were walking down this corridor, and at the entrance it said, he who is the first to light this path shall die a death by fire. James wasn't superstitious at all, so he turned on his phone flashlight and kept walking down there, right? Then they got into this big corridor with an underground river going through it. And there's a raft there, and it said, he who is the first to use this raft shall die a death by fire. So my friend Andy, again, not superstitious, he led them across it on that boat, right? And then they finally get into this big room with this gorgeous sarcophagus
end, it says, "He who is the first to steal from this tomb shall die a death more fearful than ever imaginable." Again, they didn't really care. They were grabbing all the money and going. So after they had all that money, 30 days later, they saw on the news that James, the one who turned the flashlight on, died in a house fire. 30 days later, after that, Andrew, who had bought a mega yacht, died by water. So this got Jim to be freaking out, and he eventually got into this bunker, right? The sarcophagus, though, from that night started chasing him, with this aura going around it. He ran into his bathroom trying to hide, but the sarcophagus broke in. He threw the first thing he could find, but the sarcophagus would keep coming. He grabbed one more thing and threw it, hoping it would stop it, and it did. He was freaking out, didn't know what it was, and then he saw it was a bottle of cough medicine, because all you need is a little bit of NyQuil to stop the coughing. Thank you, friends, and keep smiling.
The Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center wouldn't exist without the local folks who volunteer their time to help the homeless. In episode 4 of the third season of Local Folks Podcast, we meet Tiana, Pete, and John to learn what they do, why they volunteer, and what they have learned about the homeless and themselves as a result. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Dosed movie screening on Saturday, February 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Dosed is a documentary about a young lady who uses psychedelic therapy to overcome her addiction to heroin. After the show, there will be a panel discussion featuring members of the cast and production. They will be taking questions from the audience. Again, that's the Dosed movie screening on Saturday, February 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.